Welcome to the My Buddy Green podcast. I'm Jason Wachob, founder and co-CEO of My Buddy Green, and your host.
Lisa Merkel is the co-founder of an amazing new indoor vertical hydroponic farm in Miami called Imagine Farms. And what's so awesome is I've known Lisa for over a decade from the wellness scene back in New York City, but now we're both in Miami. Lisa did a lot of incredible things in the event space back in New York, and even spoke at our Revitalize event in 2017 about her journey with cancer. So Lisa, so good to see you.
Hi, Jason. It's great to be with you.
So let's start with your story. Let's go back to, you know, you being diagnosed with stage 3 rectal cancer and how that experience has shaped your approach to well-being.
Sure. So I will say that this past July marked 5 years cancer-free.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that means I'm officially in remission. And what is so exciting about that is means the likelihood of a reoccurrence is significantly decreased. So, you know, that's like a milestone that I've been so grateful to celebrate this past year. To share about my story, I was diagnosed in 2016 at the age of 41 of stage 3 rectal cancer. And at the time, I had been recently certified as a holistic health coach and completed a 200-hour yoga teacher training. So I identified then, and I still do, as a yogi. And by that, I mean practicing mind, body, spiritual fitness as a way of life. And then that was reflected really in my professional way of being in the world, producing events with health and wellness professionals, helping them amplify their information, their stories in real time. And I knew what a profound difference that health and well-being practice made in my life then. So that was a big part of my life. And then when I was diagnosed, it became a very important part of my journey. So I chose a very traditional, conventional treatment. So stage 3 cancer, really there's a level of urgency because of the potential of cancer metastasizing throughout the system. And I really leaned in to my complementary toolkit. And so by that, it was yoga, it was meditation, it was aromatherapy, it was, you know, all the things the Mind Body Green family loves. And I kind of leaned in like my life depended on it, because in a way it did. For me, that created a sense of agency over what was happening to my body and my system. It's being diagnosed with cancer. There's a resonance that things are very out of control. And then also the mind-body connection. Like I knew enough that I needed to calm my nervous system in order to heal. So I had that toolkit, and like I said, I really leaned into it. And then I looked to spiritual teachers and wisdom seekers to kind of help me frame the experience as I was going through it. And in the process, kind of looking towards the future, like what would life be like post-cancer, was a big part of my healing process. And that's a bit of what, you know, we're here talking about today.
Well, congratulations again on being cancer-free. And I remember you going through this and you talked about Revitalize, you know, it was a shock. You were doing all the right things. And I think, you know, it's an important point, because sometimes you can be doing all the right things and cancer happens or whatever it might be. And what I really loved about your approach is you took the best of Western, and you took the best of Eastern, and you made it your own.
I think some individuals are diagnosed with cancer and they have this like incredible change of life. Like, I need to change my approach to fitness and food. And I was already doing all those things. So I think if anything, it inspired me to expand my mindset around what health and well-being is, to like living with passion and purpose and service. And that's, I mean, in a way, I kind of feel like where we left off at Revitalize to where we are now.
Yes, yes. And in terms of expansion, that is the perfect segue to your latest venture, Imagine Farms, which you started alongside your sister, your co-founders. And it's so cool that Colleen and I had the opportunity to check it out a couple of weeks ago. And we were just blown away in terms of your operation, in terms of the different types of produce you were producing, and in terms of the potential and the scale that this way of farming, what it can do. And so let's go to the why. Like, what inspired you to start Imagine Farms with your sister? Because Colleen and I looked at this, this is so incredibly complex. Wow, it's impressive.
It is complex. So it ties into the whole kind of passion, purpose, cancer post story. So it was a week after I was diagnosed with cancer. I was visiting with my sister and my brother-in-law, and Ken showed me a video of a company based in Boston that takes used shipping containers and turns them into indoor farms. And I thought, I've never even imagined anything like this. And kind of the key points that resonated at that time was growing in a controlled environment. You could grow food anywhere, regardless of climate or season. It used a fraction of the water of a traditional farm. And then there were no pesticides or chemicals. And I very flippantly said, you know, oh my God, this is so amazing. What a great way to get into farming. And then my brother-in-law mentioned that he was working on a real estate project in Overtown, which is a historically underserved neighborhood in Miami. And they were looking at positioning one of these shipping container farms on the property. So when I went on to say, oh, could I be your farmer? Mind you, I'd just been diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. And I was kind of heading into this, a very intense treatment plan. And my sister was listening. She had just exited a produce subscription delivery service that she built with a successful exit and was kind of itching for her next thing. And she took my statement, could I be your farmer, quite literally. So she began doing a ton of research. And while I was in treatment, this is over the period of a year, she would send me articles. And then she got a little more into it. And she started doing business plans. And she put together a website. And in the process, we met a designer who kind of travels around the world building these systems. He was a designer of one of the original shipping container systems. And then it seemed like that might be something, you know, we could really do. So she began looking, is this a viable business? And I was really into understanding the food system and why, and kind of like what's going on behind the scenes. I was reading, following along, a lot of Mark Hyman came out with a food fix. A really intense interest. So while I was in the process of healing, we had this kind of like dream and vision of building this together. So when I made the move to Miami, which was about maybe 18 months after I was diagnosed, we put in all our own money, bought a couple shipping containers, found a dirt lot that we could lease, and we started farming. And we did not know how to farm at all. And the guy who built the system looked at us and said, didn't you guys like read a book or watch a video or something? And we like laughed at each other, like, no, but really determined to figure it out. And Cheryl and I did everything ourselves for the first 2 years and educated ourselves. And we were really diligent in what we were doing, meaning like the attention to detail and cleanliness. And that was the very beginning of Imagine Farms.
We're going to link to Imagine Farms in the show notes so people can actually see photos of what it looks like. But can you describe, you know, what does it look like? What does a vertical hydroponic farm look like in a shipping container? Paint the picture.
So I'll tell you, it looks a little bit like a spaceship. Not kidding on that. So I like to break it down. So an indoor vertical hydroponic farm. So indoor, we are growing food in a controlled environment. Vertical, we're utilizing the vertical space within the grow room. So what we've done is we've taken shipping containers and turned them into grow rooms. We have a group of 8 that are configured together right now. We have plans for expansion. But so vertical, utilizing the vertical space, meaning crops are grown in layers that are stacked one on top of each other. And in between each layer is lighting that's mimicking the spectrum of the sun. Hydroponic, it is a soilless farm. So the roots of the plants are receiving everything they need from a nutrient-rich water solution. And this is an ancient technique that, you know, like the Greeks were doing. And then farm, we grow a variety of crops underneath one roof. So at the farm today, we grow different varieties of leafy greens. So it's salad greens, lettuces, herbs, micros, baby brassicas, some more nutrient-dense dark leafy greens, Asian greens. We grow petite root vegetables, so radishes, different varieties, salad turnips. We recently launched the Shroom Room, which is also a controlled environment, but a different growing technique where we grow gourmet mushrooms. So we're growing yellow and gray oyster mushrooms as well as lion's mane, which I'm personally ridiculously excited about because they're very versatile in the kitchen and they have all these crazy cool health benefits. And then from there, we've developed, you know, different products. Like our jam is that we've developed these different salad blends that lend to a variety of options in your everyday diet.
Got a happiness. It was a happy blend, right? A happiness blend.
There's happiness. It's kind of our signature.
Yeah. What's in that? I want some of that happiness blend.
So it's a mix of red and green leaf lettuces. And Cheryl and I worked really hard at testing different seeds and crops and to understand what would work well together to create the right texture and flavor. And it is delicious, you know, on its own, meaning not dressed, but it could also withstand a little bit of a heavier dressing. And that's kind of like our main product, basic, delivered, ready to eat, yummy, incredible shelf life.
Is that the one that the iconic Zach the Baker in Miami uses?
That is the one. Zach gets many cases of happiness every week.
So for those in Miami listening, you are definitely familiar with Zach the Baker. And those who are not in Miami, Zach the Baker is like an award-winning, James Beard award-winning baker. Like he is one of the most well-respected bakers in the world. And if you ever go to Miami, it's like, you must go to Zach, and it's Zach with a K. And like, he loves Imagine Farms. Great stamp of approval. So coming back, I want to, you know, come back to paint the picture. So I remember you're walking through in a shipping container. It's like, you've got a little aisle in the middle, like you do in an airplane or a bus or what have you. And then all the produce is essentially stacked to the wall, like in shelves all the way from floor to ceiling. And so can you give a little bit more context in terms of, because it was so impressive, all that you can grow in one container and what that would look like in terms of yield versus I'm going to grow it the old fashioned way.
So instead of sunshine and soil, we farm with a technology in a controlled environment. And we're able to produce safe, healthy, fresh food 365 days a year, independent of season, in close proximity to where people live, which is really revolutionary in this world we're living in, without any pesticides or chemicals, using 97% less water. And the yield is 55 times that of a conventional field farm. So the farm you visited, as it is today, we're at full capacity, we're producing 1,500 pounds of produce a week on just over 2,000 square feet of a growing footprint.
So what would that translate to acreage? So like, you're producing that, what would you have in terms of land to produce an equivalent?
So, well, it's 55 times the yield. So 2,000 square feet times 55. And then Our vision is to expand the concept of grow rooms into a larger warehouse, which is, you know, our growth and expansion plan, which we kind of talked about a little bit. And that yield will be 85 times because we'd be going higher.
Wow. So you just reeled off some very impressive facts, which I think make the case that this is incredibly important. And we need to focus on this. In terms of statistics, data, you know, facts, tidbits, what are some others that stood out along the way when you kind of dove in headfirst to this world?
The thing that I think has left the most important impression on me is the fact that we utilize a technique called precision growing. That is, with technology, we are able to monitor exactly what the crops need, and we can focus on growing for flavor and nutrition. And that's a departure from the way the agricultural system works at the moment. So, I mean, I'll be honest, I was a little weirded out when we first started that we're growing food in a shipping container because, you know, when I said I'll be your farmer, I kind of imagine like a little flowery dress and like some cute boots and I'm outside with the butterflies and the bumblebees and now I'm in a shipping container with my sister. And I've come to the realization that it's really a pristine environment. All the intelligence lives in the seed. We put it in ideal conditions to thrive. And the farm is very clean. A big part of our jam is that our grow rooms are completely cleaned and sanitized after each growth cycle. We clean with enzymes, which are, you know, like naturally occurring, like are in your stomach. And we sanitize with a combination. It's a concentration of hydrogen peroxide and vinegar. So of course, in a concentration, it becomes toxic. Like you wouldn't drink it or touch it with your bare hands. But I'm someone who's sensitive to a toxic load. I feel completely safe in the environment. And then, you know, we're focused on growing for flavor and nutrition. That's what really stands out to me.
And so before we segue to nutrition, let's spend a little bit more time on the environmental impact and how farming like this, you know, and I start thinking about the benefits of doing this in an urban city center. I think about food access. I think, you know, and this all is somewhat related to the environmental impact, but let's start there. Talk about the environmental impact and how it's so positive.
Yeah. So first we have to recognize that our agricultural system and the climate are in this like destructive interconnected feedback loop. So agriculture is one of the greatest offenders of emitting carbon emissions. And the effects of global warming and climate change are really hitting farmers the hardest. So think there traditional farmers are up against floods, droughts, megastorms, fires, these things. So it's really important to recognize that. And what we're doing is kind of an outlier from this destructive loop that I'm talking about. We're growing a lot of food on a compact footprint. And then what comes up is scarcity of resources. So one, we look at the water, the drought that's happening out west. That's scary, right? Like, do we have enough water to grow food for a growing population? And then arable farmland. So that's referring to the health of topsoil and availability of farmland. So again, we're kind of operating outside of those factors. We have zero food waste, which we know that 40% of all food ends up in landfills, and that's across the globe. We've got zero food waste. That's amazing. Zero fertilizer runoff. This is important when we talk about fertilizer choking waterways. So lakes, streams, oceans. In Miami, it's the Biscayne Bay. We experience annually a fish kill where there are algae blooms in Biscayne Bay and there's a warning, excuse me, not to go into the water. And the fish are just belly up and you can smell it. Again, no pesticides, no harsh chemicals. And when I talk about that, it's me as an individual and, you know, my toxic load, my exposure to toxins. But I also think about how pesticides and those chemicals end up in our drinking water supply. And then really important are the individuals that are working in the fields in agriculture and their exposure to conditions related to climate change, pesticides. This morning I went to a press event for the Aspen Climate event that's happening in March next year. And the panel conversation was about heat and how individuals that are working outside all over the globe are most susceptible to climate change for working under those conditions. So we're talking about moving agriculture indoors, and we kind of bypass a lot of these issues. It's both climate mitigation right? So we talk about not participating in a lot of the ways that the agricultural system is contributing to climate change. And then we're talking about adaptation. How are we adapting to a world with a new kind of reality when we look at how we have been growing food?
I also think of benefits in an urban setting. And then I also think about food access, insecurity. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think there's huge potential.
Relocalizing a food system has, you know, a ton of benefits. One, it's a local economy. Two, it's the ability to create access points. So when we talk about food access, the first thing that comes to my mind is when I speak about passion and purpose, I'm in a position to create a sustainable business that's scaling the growth of healthy food to feed people in the community and how important it is to kind of ride that wave and the momentum that we've benefited from thus far. But then I talk about access points. So we're at the farmers markets where individuals can use food stamps, and they do. We work with a local organization called Food Rescue South Florida. And anytime we have a surplus, that food is immediately transported over to the Miami Rescue Mission or the Lotus House. They have fresh greens for meals for a couple of days. And then I think about touch points where we can affect and inspire individuals on a very personal level. So we're committed to educational programming as we scale in hospitals and schools and community centers with individuals that are underserved, and looking at where we can access those distribution channels.
You know, I think of Ron Finley, the famous guerrilla gardener, who you know, lives in South Central LA, and said more people get killed by drive-throughs than drive-bys. And if I want to get an organic tomato, I got to drive 45 minutes. And I think he's obviously speaking in hyperbole, but I think the point he's trying to make is that there are food deserts and access is difficult for many. So if you think about the implications of being in an urban center and having containers that can go vertical, where, you know, in more urban environments, land is at a premium, so it's hard to go wide, so to speak. Acreage is more costly, whereas growing vertical, what are the dimensions of a shipping container? It's like 20 by 10 or something?
So a shipping container is 40 by 8 by 9 high.
So that you can work with that. And so the implications as you think about access to nutritious vegetables, which, you know, I think a lot of people will disagree about what to eat in our world. And that could be, you know, a number of episodes that will never end. But I think what everyone will agree on is eating vegetables, eating greens are good. And so I think the implications are very important in that we need to supply people with nutritious food at a reasonable cost. And this is a vehicle to do so.
So Jason, on that same point, I think a lot about our product is, so it's delivered fresh and it's got a substantial shelf life when compared to leafy greens. So 95% of all leafy greens consumed in the US are grown in California, Arizona, and Mexico. And that takes time to make its way across a very clunky supply chain before it hits a distribution center, or the grocery store, or your fridge, you know, whatever it is. So I think about people are more likely to eat a container of fresh greens, knowing it's going to be fresh in their fridge for a week, and tasty and craveable, and it doesn't need to be washed. It's delivered ready to eat. Like, it's the new fast food. It's a great base for a healthy diet, and it doesn't have to be, you know, just a very specific type of person that eats it. It's whether you're paleo or keto or vegetarian or vegan or, you know, any of those things, everyone can agree that having fresh leafy greens that are easy and convenient at home can lend to supporting having a healthy diet.
Agreed. And so, you know, I'm going to come back to nutrition. I'm curious from a nutrition or nutrient density perspective, what's the most nutritious vegetable you grow over there?
So, so let me say this about transporting the food. It degrades in both flavor and nutrition. And we know that flavor intact is also indicative of nutrition intact. That being said, that speaks to the fact that we grow and distribute locally within hours of harvesting. The number one most nutrient-dense leafy green at the farm is watercress, and it's actually the number one most nutrient-dense of all the leafy greens. And I had never really been a watercress eater, and I was surprised to find out this fact. And it's our top seller at Milam's, the supermarket. So there's Latin cultures, Haitian culture, Caribbean cultures that grew up eating watercress. And the individuals are so happy to have fresh watercress. It's a leafy green that really degrades in flavor and nutrition most quickly after being harvested. So where like a spring mix can, you know, be stretched out a little bit longer, a watercress will begin to lose its flavor. And it's so flavorful. It's like peppery, and this, it's very stemmy, and the stems are flavorful and delicious. They're kind of crunchy. And what I also love about it is that it could be sauteed. And then you have, you know, more versatility in the kitchen.
You know, watercress was a new one for me as well. We had Amy Sapala on the show a couple episodes. We'll put it in the show notes. And I said, what's, you know, she's working in regenerative agriculture in Ohio. And I said, what's the most nutritious vegetable you grow? And it was watercress. I was like, wow, you know what? I don't think watercress gets enough credit.
It really doesn't. You can change that. We're giving watercress the credit it deserves.
And so in terms of what else you grow, you mentioned lion's mane. What are some of your other favorites that are maybe a little bit more out of the ordinary or exotic that people should be aware of?
So we have a secret space in the farm that is just for testing seeds. And I've got a couple of my favorite things. We don't have room on a larger scale right now, but one is a leaf that's a hybrid of a broccoli and a kale. And it has a sweetness like a young broccoli, but the leaf is kind of hearty like a kale. And I eat it raw, but I also really like it sauteed. So that's another one. And then...
Has anyone ever done that? I've never heard of a broccoli kale hybrid.
I mean, I can hook you up. We have it.
That's cool. I've never heard of that. I didn't know you could do that.
I mean, I think, you know, talking about watercress getting the credit it deserves, there's such a whole world of leafy greens that, you know, in the grocery store, it's like a spring mix, an arugula, a spinach, and there's so much more. We grow a handful of different mustard greens, and there's one in particular that when it gets to kind of like a mid-size, it has a peppery finish that isn't overwhelming, and the leaf is kind of sturdy like an arugula. It's something that I love. And then I think about in Ayurveda, mustard greens, it's something that kind of promotes digestion. And there's just like all these super yummy, healthy things. And then there's all the, like so many different herbs have these great health benefits and are a great way to kind of like add a little zing to a meal. We've got some really beautiful herbs growing as well.
What herb specifically? I'm curious.
So there's a thyme that all my chefs like freak out about because it isn't very woody. It's delicate. And the underside of the leaf is like a purple color. So it's incredibly fragrant. We've got like a holy basil, which has all these health benefits. I make a tea out of it. We have that growing in our little secret room, which this is... The whole farm is totally sold out week after week. We have standing orders. So we're in the process of scaling and expanding, and we'll have more room to put these things that I'm talking about into full production.
That's awesome. Next time we come, we get to see the secret room.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to take a step back. I think what you're doing is obviously so important, and there are huge environmental benefits. And, you know, in terms of the environmental conversation, you know, it's a way of living. And I'm always curious what people do, you know, in their real life, you know, with real commuting, with, you know, real consumerism, you have to buy things. And so, you know, for me, whether it's, you know, buying cotton, for me with like fashion in general, my philosophy is buy something like a great cotton tee and wear it, and buy less, but buy less of things you really like that are going to last. You know, I've had this cotton tee for like 5 years. It'll probably last another 10. Or eating a more plant-based diet. Not saying go vegan or 100%, but like eating more plants is net beneficial. And so, and food waste is a huge one. Like, I think that's one, like, if you look, you know, we've had Paul Hawken on the show and you talk about what's really contributing to climate change, like, yes, emissions from vehicles are important, but food waste is by far and away ahead of that one. So like just being mindful of food waste is a huge one. So I'm curious, like in terms of your day to day, like what are some of your like daily, because I know you're normal. You're not, you know, we're not living in an episode of Portlandia where, you know, nothing's ever good enough. And I think that's a slippery slope. Can you describe like some of your daily practices as you try to like live a more environmentally conscious life?
So fashion is a big one that comes up for me also. I'm a really big advocate of like secondhand and resale. So I think organizations like The Real Real have an incredible value. And then I also think about investing in pieces, very similar to what you said, that are quality and have longevity. And by that, I mean both in style and the quality of whatever, you know, the product is, really investing in that. So fast fashion does not appeal to me. I think a lot about the conversation about plastic. I see individuals carrying plastic water bottles and it, you know, like it just breaks my heart. And then at the same time, I'm very aware that plastic was a big part of the surgery that saved my life. You know, like think about all the things that are in, you know, a surgery suite that are made of plastic that are used one time for sanitary reasons or whatnot that are used as life-saving. So that conversation around plastic is something I think about, where we can eliminate the use or even reuse things. I have a tendency to gravitate towards that. And then I just feel like we're living in a time where it feels really good to be a little bit of a minimalist, meaning, you know, there's like a conscientiousness around what we're purchasing and why, and then even reusing things. So a lot of things I buy at the grocery store, I look for things in glass jars as opposed to plastic or any other kind of packaging. And then I reuse it over and over again. I think it's having an everyday awareness of how we move through the day and the world and making choices with consideration.
And I think more companies are more mindful of it. One, you know, I'll segue to the Miami community, but one thing I'll share. So I love walking to Panther Coffee in Coconut Grove. And what they recently did is, you know, they designed a Panther Coffee Yeti. And if you buy the Panther Coffee Yeti, you get 10% off of your purchase go forward. I'm like, all right, I'm a sucker for a good Yeti and I love Panther Coffee. But also too, so like what I'm doing, it's better for the environment than buying the, I basically go there every day. And then two, it's better for me because you drink the coffee cups, it's not good for you. Like you're not eating plastic, but there are so many, you know, we had someone on the show, Jesse Daystar, we'll put in the show notes a year ago, and he referenced the study, which is out there. You can see it. Essentially, we eat a credit card's worth of plastic a year. And we're physically not eating it, but it's getting into our system. I'm like, when you just, whoa.
Well, so Jason, full disclosure, we package Imagine Farms in plastic clamshells. And that is because at the moment there is no alternative. And there's resources and energy put into growing that food and keeping it fresh so that it gets eaten and enjoyed. I have an incredible awareness. And we are looking at alternative options. I have a concept that we are ready to prototype that would be an alternative that would just completely shake up the whole clamshell world. But I need, you know, investment to kind of get that going and market test it. Yeah, the plastic conversation, it's an awareness and how do we transition? And as this conversation comes more to light and more people have awareness, there's businesses that are racing towards solutions. I saw, you know, Tom Ford did the plastic challenge, and there's two different companies that won awards from that have alternatives to plastic made out of seaweed that I'm very interested in as they progress.
Look, I think, you know, I think plastic's obviously an issue, but I'm also pragmatic. For you to put your product, unfortunately, has to go in plastic. You know, if you forget your water bottle and you're traveling, you're going to have to buy a bottle of water at the airport because you need to be hydrated when you fly. And the water on the airplane, if they're not giving you a bottle, is complete crap. So like it happens, plastic happens. but I hear you. So coming back to Miami, you know, as I've said in the show, we're new here. We love it. There's so many great, like-minded, mission-driven entrepreneurs like yourself. There's just like an incredible warmth here, sense of optimism. And I know you've experienced that with Imagine. So can you talk a little bit about how the Miami community has really embraced Imagine Farms and what you guys are doing?
So there is definitely a concentrated population of individuals that want healthy food that's free from chemicals and pesticides. They want to support local. I'll share with you the story about our introduction to Milam's Market. So Milam's Markets is a local South Florida grocery store chain, family owned and run. It's something like 20 family members are running the company. And upon introduction to the produce buyer for the whole chain, Cheryl and I were invited to bring in products for him to look at. And I don't even think he tasted it. He immediately looked at it and said, I want this many units of all of your SKUs for all of the stores. When can you start? And he was responding to customer demands. So individuals are walking through the store, talking to the produce managers in the store, asking for local food. And they responded. And we really wanted to prove that channel of distribution, understanding what would the market value be in a retail environment. And we were given front and center placement. I call it the Lettuce Lovers Wall of Fame. Because, you know, you have that like wall of different lettuce varieties. We got, you know, this amazing placement. And week after week, sales continue to grow, you know, which really speaks to the customers, you know, within the area. When it comes to chefs and restaurants, there's a huge community of chefs that are really interested in quality ingredients and understanding where their food comes from. So Chef Niven, who was with Orno and Mame, which is in Coral Gables, he's a Food and Wine Award recipient. He actually has a farm in Homestead, and he purchases a substantial amount of product from us on a weekly basis. So he recognizes he's growing what he can in Homestead. So like at Orno, there's this amazing okra on the menu that comes from his farm. And we're growing the leafy greens. So that, you know, that's on the menu. So there's a whole community. I mean, you mentioned Zach the Baker. The story is when Cheryl and I were first starting at the one shipping container farm, we would go weekly into Zach the Baker and have a cup of coffee and, you know, like a catch up. And we'd been chit chatting with Zach about what we were doing. When the time was right, we brought in the product for him to look at it. And he took one look, tasted it, and said, this is amazing. When can we start? I went 60 pounds a week. And Cheryl, you met Cheryl. She's like, no problem. We'll start next week. But another interesting thing, Zach the Baker is a kosher baker, a kosher restaurant. And they have very specific standards for the cleanliness. And because it's grown hydroponically and there's no, you know, dirt, for they have like a religious person that needs to look through the greens, there was an added value benefit. So the restaurants love it. The chefs love it. The consumers love it. We're at the farmer's market. We have like a cult following. We call them lettuce lovers, that if for any reason we miss the farmer's market, we start getting phone calls on the 1-800 line. Where are you? And then as we grow and expand, we've created this sort of distribution matrix that includes a channel of distribution that will include like hospitals and schools, because I think as a organized culture, we all agree that those are two channels that would really benefit from having healthy food regularly. There's a lot of support for that.
Agreed. So speak a little bit in closing about your vision for the future, not only of Imagine Farms, but the food system and the education that needs to take place as well.
So food system overall, I'm incredibly optimistic about the marriage of technology and nature. And that goes specifically to what we're doing. When I describe an indoor vertical hydroponic farm, the innovation happening around the type of equipment and inputs are improving, you know, by the minute, by the second, really quickly. And I think about how this type of farming can complement other aspects of agriculture, like regenerative that you mentioned, kind of where appropriate. And working all together, how can we reorganize a regional, localized food system that's really responsive to the needs of the human beings that we're there to serve? For Imagine Farms, we have great plans. We have incredible vision. So we're in the process of an expansion where I had mentioned the concept of grow rooms will be translated into much larger grow rooms in a warehouse. And to do this, we have onboarded some incredible leadership and talent around growing and operations that have joined our team recently, which we're ridiculously excited about. We brought on Kyle Cummings, who has a background in food distribution, right? Moving around like a lot of food, it's perishable. It's got, you know, a specific shelf life. There's a lot of logistics. He's incredible experience with that and building out cold storage. We're so lucky that he's agreed to join the team. And then a couple that came to us from The Village Is Grown, which is a retirement community in Central Florida that built out an 8-acre, 7 million pounds a year agricultural kind of like plaza concept. And Jen and Adam are now working with us, and Jen is super cool. She's all about food as medicine. She's been working with universities and hospital systems to create data-driven studies, proving lifestyle, the positive effects of healthy eating on health outcomes, and Adam in operations. So we've got this like incredible team, and as an organization, we're growing. The next facility will be 5.5 million pounds of produce a year, multiple different crops, feeding these different channels of distribution and access points. And then to the question about education, I think about this. Imagine Farms is a lifestyle brand. A lot of what we need to do is educate people about the food system and the opportunity that we have here. And within that, how do we serve those individuals? So I mentioned, you know, schools and hospitals, but really teaching people about the benefits of a healthy diet and how to incorporate the products that we grow, the produce, to make it really like a part of a lifestyle that's real, that's accessible, that's convenient. And that's healthy for individuals and the planet and all the little critters.
Amen. We'll close there. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jason. Grateful for the opportunity.